Hello and welcome to the newest episode of the Feeding Curiosity podcast, and I'm delighted to welcome our new guest today, Alicia Grogan. Now, she is a licensed occupational therapist and founder of Your Kids Table. She's got over 80 years of experience with expertise in sensory processing and feeding development in babies, toddlers and children, and she also has three boys of her very own. Alicia, a very warm welcome to the show. Please, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where Your Kids Table began?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, I'm a pediatric OT. So I, very early in my career, ended up finding myself with lots of kiddos on my caseload that had feeding difficulties. Parents would often describe this as picky eating, or a baby or a toddler that was struggling to learn how to eat foods. Sometimes they wouldn't take purees, sometimes they wouldn't take table foods. And I soon found myself needing to become an expert in this whole feeding realm. Coupling that with my background in sensory processing, I found that parents, even after they left my caseload, would still call and follow up with questions as their kids were getting older or when they had another child. And I decided to create Your Kids Table, which was over 10 years ago now, as a blog to start answering some of these questions. So the parents had a reliable resource they could go to and get real information on what was actually working, because as an OT, I had tried everything and really had found a large, specific things that worked and what didn't work across a large range of kids. Then also at that time, I was starting to have my own children. I was getting a lot of real life experience and had my own child with feeding difficulties at, 9 and 10 months old, and really got to learn what it was like to live that on a day in and day out basis, which gave me a much better perspective on what it's really like to have a child that is struggling to eat.
Yeah. And it can also, it can feel quite lonely, can't it, if you're in that position. And so having a resource is just such a fantastic thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I felt that too. I felt that too, even as an OT, and that was really eye-opening to me, because I was already an expert in this, and realizing that parents needed that was such a drive for me. And this was actually all going on as I started the blog. And then we went on to create several courses to just help parents go deeper and really get the support that they needed and be able to do a lot of these strategies at home on their own.
That's just fantastic. And congratulations, because that's, it's a 10-year project, isn't it, to bring all these ideas and thoughts to fruition. And what a fantastic business you've created. And I'm sure it's so satisfying to see, especially babies with feeding difficulties, come through and helping and support parents along that journey. It's amazing. So we've asked you on today to help explain to our audience and to me what exactly is oral development and oral exploration, because it's an area where I had next to no understanding about when my children were little. So obviously, from what you've just said, there's a lot to it. So I was wondering if you could just sort of give us some of the details.
Right. Well, one of the first things that is happening inside of an infant's mouth is that they have this very sensitive gag reflex. This is an important part of development, and there's a very good reason that newborns have this very sensitive gag reflex. If something inadvertently ends up coming into their mouth, they will push it out right away, because the gag reflex is all the way at the front of their mouth, right up by their lips. In fact, I've even heard stories of, an older sibling trying to feed their newborn baby brother or sister, and them, gagging and even maybe throwing up right away. And that is exactly what that is designed to do. Now, of course, there are suck patterns that are happening for infants, and as they are growing, that is evolving. But what we're looking for as babies start to get a little bit older, we're looking for them to start getting ready to actually eat food. And that really begins at around the 3 to 4 month mark, at the very earliest stages when babies start to find their hands. And this is so important that babies start to bring their hand to their mouth, because it brings their hands together. So they start to come to midline, which is an important developmental skill. And it also starts to teach them this kind of motion of putting things up into their mouth, and it starts to decrease that gag reflex. So as they start to put their hands in their mouth, and then later in that 4 to 6 month range, start to put other things in their mouth, like teethers or toys, or their whole fist in their mouth, they really start to decrease that gag reflex, which is so important, because if they don't, when they mom or dad goes to give them that first bite of food, they're probably going to gag immediately, because that gag reflex is still at the front of their mouth. And they are also probably very sensitive to different textures, because they haven't had anything in their mouth except, you know, the mom's breast or the bottle. And they're not used to having any other textures or flavors or smells in or near or around their mouth. So they might be very averse to that. And so those early steps of their hands and then teethers and toys in their mouth is very important for kind of setting a foundation and preparing the way for them to be able to eat. Of course, with all of that, the muscles are also getting a lot of practice, because the tongue is moving, the jaw is opening up and down, they're closing their lips around the teethers, all of those little movements that we sort of take for granted and may not even notice are all helping to strengthen the muscles that they need to be able to chew and manipulate food in the coming months.
Yeah, and I think that's so interesting, because, you know, actually my husband just said to me, he was like, so that's why learning, teaching your baby to clap is so important. And I haven't even occurred to me, but, you know, even like clapping, what a great thing to do, because it's bringing the hands to the midline. I don't know what your thoughts on that.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That's a wonderful thing to be doing, to have your kid be bringing them together. And that needs to happen for them ultimately to be able to feed themselves, even when they're starting to do that with one hand, because our mouth is at the midline. So they need to be able to get the spoon into their mouth. And that's why I love the little beginner spoon that you guys have, because it really promotes that bringing the hands together, and they can practice just getting that up into their mouth. That's called your dip it, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Our dip it spoon. Yeah. And that was a bit of a revelation when we sort of made that, because there were, as far as we were aware, there's no other product that does that. And sort of that encouraging that independence from earlier on, or making it more accessible, was something that I was really pleased that spoon facilitates.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's great. And I certainly haven't seen one like that either.
Yeah. And so in terms of sort of bringing hands to the midline, does that sort of help? We kind of looking at developing hand-eye coordination. Is that kind of one of the major goals we're trying to work on?
It is ultimately for kids to be able to feed themselves. And there's a variety of components that are happening. The hand-eye coordination is key, and all of these things start to build on top of each other. So they have to have a decent sense of their midline to be able to start working on their hand-eye coordination. They also have to be developing their fine motor skills. So using their fingers to be able to pick up food, and to even manipulate a spoon, or later a fork, because a spoon is the first utensil developmentally that they will learn to use.
Yeah. And so if we sort of go along sort of the time scales, so around sort of 3 to 4 months, what would you sort of expect a baby to be able to do around there, and sort of how does it change? Because I think that's something I probably would have found quite useful, is sort of what milestone should I be looking out for?
So of course every child is unique, and there are lots of variables that will affect the kind of the pace that they'll hit milestones. And we do give babies a fairly generous range because of all of these different variables that could be affecting a child. But generally speaking, We look for around 3 months is when they're going to start to just bring their hands up to their mouth. And that's usually you'll see one hand coming up. They'll start putting their fingers in their like parts of their hand in their mouth. At around 4 months, we're starting to see those hands come together and come up to their mouth. And then soon after that, in that 4 to 6 month range is when we're starting to see them be able to hold on to something and bring that up to their mouth, which again is something that we really want to encourage. I would say if you see your child avoiding bringing either their hands or a teether to their mouth, that's definitely, a red flag that, hey, there's might be something going on there, because babies should naturally want to do that. It does not mean that it can't be worked through. It can't be helped. It just means, what is that they need some help, and it's something to work on helping them do it. What I tend to see happens, quite understandably, is that it seems like a very innocent thing to just let go of. So a parent might tend to think, oh, they don't like teethers. Oh, they don't like putting their hands in their mouth. That's great. I don't have to worry about germs. Oh, they're not picking everything up off the floor. Wonderful. I don't have to worry about them choking on anything. But we want to see babies doing those things. And in fact, when I work with picky eaters that are older, one of the first questions I ask parents are, what did they do as a baby? Because it gives me a lot of insight into what those underlying causes are that actually still might need addressed when a child is 2, 3, 4, or even older, because some of those difficulties might still be there. Those sensory sensitivities, a sensitive gag reflex, because they've never been desensitized for even from those early years. So it's really to no parent's fault at all, because it just seems like a godsend that they're not putting these things in their mouth, but it really should be a little bit of a warning sign to us to promote it all the more.
Yeah, and that's something I just had no understanding of when actually my children put everything in their mouth. I was kind of like, it's just too much, everything was going in. But actually, it's really reassuring to hear that, because I think especially on the back of a pandemic where, you know, hygiene and hand washing and alcoholing our hands has been so paramount, to sort of actually be encouraging children to be curious with their hands is really important. Do you find that often, should parents worry if their babies are sort of gagging on their fingers? Because I can imagine the reaction ordinarily would be, oh, just if they're gagging, pull their hand. Like, as parents, should we try and remove things from their mouth if they're, you know, even if they're, say, holding a biggish teether that we know isn't a choking hazard, but, you know, when they retch or they gag, is that something we should be concerned about?
I think it's something to take note of, but I'm really glad you asked that question, because it's scary when we see our kids gag, even when we know it's just their hand or it's a teether that is totally safe and is clearly not going to get stuck in their throat. It can be concerning that they are gagging. And it's very, very important that parents know that gagging is a normal part of development, because they are decreasing that gag reflex. If you see your child doing it excessively, that would definitely be something that I would want to talk to the doctor about. There could be some other things going on. But I also, in any situation, if a child is gagging on their hand or something that's safe, then I want to be very reassuring in that moment. I want to look not alarmed, because even a baby at 6 months old or 7 months old, if they're doing this, can really pick up on our fears and our reaction and start to have even a negative association then with kind of putting this stuff in their mouth. If every time they put a teether in their mouth, there's a little gag, and, you know, one of the parents are going, oh my goodness, you know, no, like, pull that out of your mouth. They will quickly become alarmed and start to naturally start to pull away from putting things in their mouth. And then at the same time, the parent isn't promoting putting anything in their mouth, because, you know, they did gag and they want to avoid it. So that can kind of that can create its own snowball of something getting bigger as well. So I think it's important to take note, but it's also very normal to see that happening occasionally, even with foods as well, for kids to be occasionally gagging, occasionally.
Yeah, and actually sort of those, so I mean, I guess in terms of how we can support a baby, sort of that pre-eating phase, that the better we are as parents, or the better your baby is at having that desensitization, I can't say the word, are we sort of setting them up for success when they get to the table for the first time?
Is that gosh, yes, absolutely. I think it can make a tremendous difference if your child does not have any kind of underlying difficulties to begin with. You're really setting a super strong foundation for them to be able and willing and capable of eating that food once that does begin. And for kiddos that do have some underlying difficulties, which some kids do have sensory processing difficulties that they are born with, that is not the result of anything the parent is doing or not doing, as well as just some oral motor coordination difficulties or weaknesses, again, that are to no fault of the parent. But if those things are already kind of under the surface, encouraging this exploration will only set them up for more success. They still may need some other strategies, some more support. It might take them a little bit longer, but the earlier that this can start, the absolute better position the child is in to be able to eat a wider variety of food.
Yeah, and I wanted to sort of pick up on your point about those oral motor skills. What are those? And sort of, do we think of it as a whole system together, or do you kind of divide it into different sort of areas of using different muscles in your mouth?
So we do, as feeding therapists, we do look at specific muscles. Of course, it is a functioning unit, and all of these things need to coordinate together. So we do call them oral motor muscles, but we will isolate and look down at, is this an overall difficulty with coordination? Is there multiple muscles that are involved? Is it just one? There are four main muscles that are muscle groups that are really involved with eating. One is the tongue, which is a massive muscle and obviously plays a very significant role in the actual swallowing of food, but is also very important in chewing, because the tongue has to move the food over to the teeth, bring it back, has to form a ball, or what we would call a bolus, with the food so that the child can swallow. So the tongue is extremely instrumental. Of course, the jaw as well. Once a child is eating table foods or finger foods, they have to be able to munch up and down on those foods. And so the jaw strength is important as well. And the lips. We actually need our lips to be able to close a little bit, to be able to hold the food in the mouth and kind of support the act of eating. Now, this is something that babies are often working on. We often see babies eating with a really wide mouth open. Sometimes their lips will even kind of, you can see that the lips are kind of hanging open. They're drooling while they're eating. So that lip development is really supported by chewing on teethers and putting things in their mouth, because they're closing their lips around it. And then lastly, actually, are our cheeks. These cheek muscles here, it's important that they are toned and have some strength to them, because they, on the inside of the mouth, are actually holding the food in place while the food is being chewed on top of the teeth. So even the cheek muscles play a role in eating skills as well.
Yeah, and I'm just going back to your point on the tongue, and actually the tongue, obviously, along with the taste buds, and all the sensation, it's such a vital part of food, isn't it? And I think sometimes it's easy to forget actually what an important structure that is.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, so there's a huge sensory component there as well, because it is not only registering the flavor of food, but it's also registering the texture of a food. So we have tactile receptors on our tongue and all through our mouth, actually, that are you know, letting a child know if that's hot, if that's cold, if that's crunchy, if it's soft, you know, if it's slimy, all of those different textures are being perceived to a in a large part by the tongue.
Yeah. So as a parent, then what sort of strategies would you employ to sort of support this oral development? We've sort of talked about using teethers, but is there sort of something you would recommend with a teether, for example, to help support, or any other strategies?
Yes. So again, of course, I'm encouraging any oral exploration with safe items. If your baby has toys on the floor that are, you know, baby and toddler safe, they're clean. If you need to clean the toys, that, you know, that's totally okay. But you know, allow your child to chew on those. Sometimes we pull things out of the mouth. Of course, if it's something that's unsafe, we need to be doing that. But we want to give them as many opportunities to chew on those things. I like to have teethers around. I want them in the diaper bag. I want them in their toys. I want teethers around often, and I will even, you know, give them one often in their car seat while they're traveling so that they have something that they can kind of mouth on and play with. I think the more oral exploration, the better. I think also from a really probably even 4 to 5 months old, depending on the type of high chair that a family has, bringing them to the table and giving them their teether while the family is eating. And then once they're 5 months and 6 months old, you can even start to, I would say definitely six. Some babies could do 5 months old. You could give them a large raw carrot or like a whole stick of celery and just allow them to play with it, you know, put it on their lips. Only foods that they could get no pieces off of at all. If by some chance you have a 6 month old that has like a lot of teeth and they're able to get some shreds off, I would not give it to them. But this would just be for oral exploration and for them feeling some different textures in their mouth.
Yeah. And actually, I think what you've sort of said there sort of almost flips on its head why teethers are important, because the name as a teether is very much, and I'm as a dentist, I know we talked about this the other day, you know, it's all about the physiology of the teeth pushing through the gums, and being called a teether actually does a huge disservice to actually a really significant part of the benefit of a child playing with an oral toy, might be a better word for it than a teether, because for I think a lot of parents have a misconception that it's just about pain relief, and from what you're saying, it's absolutely not.
Absolutely. I actually have to admit, I don't think I've ever thought of that before, but you're 100% right. And I think that also leads into the, when a child isn't interested in using a teether, it's like, oh, well, they don't need that. But yeah, it's so good for them, to be using a teether or again, other appropriate toys, because we want to see babies putting things in their mouth, safe things in their mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think maybe we should rename them oral toys.
Yes, yes.
Have a rebrand of teethers. So if a baby's, you've sort of alluded to this before, so if a baby's muscles or coordination is developing slowly, what are the sort of telltale signs of that we could sort of point to? And where would you sort of signpost people to go and seek help? Because I think that's sort of, like you say, oh, if my baby doesn't do that, I don't have a problem. But actually, if you think, you do realize there's a problem, like, where would you go? Sort of, what would your advice be?
Sure. Well, I do think, you know, obviously the first thing is bringing your pediatrician into the loop. I do want to caution parents listening, though, that my experience, especially here in the U.S., and I do have families from all over the world and in the U.K. in our program, so I do hear this really consistently, is that pediatricians often dismiss it as an over-concerned parent at this age, because there is a range, and it's okay if a baby is taking a little bit longer. So that is not the case with all pediatricians. So I think it's important to bring it up to the pediatrician. If you are not getting answers and you're like, well, no, there's some difficulties here, in that they're still gagging, or they're gagging excessively. Another sign, especially for poor oral motor skills, are when you start feeding your baby, and this would be a little bit later, if you do baby-led weaning, you would see it earlier. If you're following kind of a traditional path, you would probably not see this until 9 months when you start feeding them finger foods. But they will often put something in their mouth and it will either get lost in their mouth. That's called food pocketing. And they will just, it'll just stay in there. Like it'll fall behind their teeth or under their tongue and they kind of lose track of it. And parents will often say, this is really weird, but my kid will hold that noodle in their mouth for hours. And it's just a sign. It can be a sensory sign sometimes, but at this age, it's usually a sign of oral motor difficulties because they can't get the noodle where it needs to go or that piece of food. Yeah. And so it gets kind of stuck in there. Or kids will chew it and there's no distress. They'll chew up the food and then they'll put their finger in their mouth and pull it out after a few seconds of chewing it or even a few minutes or trying to chew it. Or you'll see them kind of just go and they'll just, there's not a distress. It's not a, I don't like this. They'll push it out with their tongue or pull it out. And it's because they can't get it to where it needs to go. And so they just kind of give up on it. And they're like, I'm just going to pull this out. I'm just going to spit it out. And so when you see your child doing that a lot, that would be another sign that I would be really going to the doctor. I would consider getting a second opinion. Here in the U.S., you're able to, in a lot of cases, make a direct appointment with a feeding therapist, which is usually an occupational therapist or a speech therapist, and have an evaluation done. So if you're able to and you're not getting the answer from the doctor, in most cases, you can call what like a private practice or your local children's hospital and find out about services and have them evaluated. Of course, we have tons of resources on your kids' table too, checklists and things to help you as well.
Yeah. Can I just ask a little bit about speech? Because I know obviously we sort of haven't really gone into speech, but you often find children that have sort of say weakness of oral coordination or neural muscles. Is there often a speech component that sort of, is it linked? Is their speech often a little bit delayed or is it often, can it be quite separated?
Many times it is not connected. And I will see lots of kids have oral motor difficulties with eating and not speech. I would, in my personal experience, it seems to be about 50-50. Okay. So it's hard to know and we don't have the best research to point to. Is that a coincidence or is that a direct correlation? It seems clearly to make sense because your mouth does need to be in certain, you know, your tongue needs to be in certain positions to make sounds. If you have tongue weakness that is evident with eating and there's a speech delay for those sounds that the tongue needs to make, there obviously seems to be a connection there. But it does seem to be isolated for some kids. And also with speech, some kids will find creative workarounds to make sounds and, you know, and that's why they may end up in speech therapy because they're not pronunciating correctly. So because they have found ways to just kind of work around wherever that weakness is.
Yeah, that's, I think that's such an, because it's such an interesting way to think about it because if you've got, say, if you have got poor speech, that's very obvious, isn't it? You know, because the sounds are different, but actually just because you've got one, it doesn't mean you've got the other and vice versa. So it's a good thing for parents just to have in their armory of just look at the whole system. Don't just focus on one. If something's working, it doesn't mean everything's going to be working. I guess we're all unique. So what I was going to ask you now is having, usually we have some quick fire questions from the audience, but we thought we'd mix it up today. And I was wondering whether you could give us some top tips. And from what you've said, there are sort of certain activities that you would certainly promote for full sensory, encouraging oral sensory explanation. So I was wondering, what would your sort of top three tips be for, you know, supporting oral sensory exploration?
First would be to let your kid get messy. While you're feeding them, while you're playing with them outside in the dirt or the mud, Let them get messy. This actually helps their sensory processing develop. While you're feeding them, if you're feeding them baby food, don't wipe off their face after every bite of food. Just wait till the end and let them get messy. Give them their own bowl of food. It can be just a little bit, and encourage them to put their fingers in it and put it on their mouth and to make a mess, because it's really good for their sensory system. I would also say, for more specifically to the mouth, would be to use a toothbrush, or, you know, one of the little, the things you can slip on your fingers if you have a really little baby and they only have a couple teeth. I would even say do this if your child doesn't have any teeth yet. I think by 5 to 6 months old, you can be doing this, probably even a little bit sooner. You can even just use a washcloth and kind of wipe off their gums. It helps them get used to brushing their teeth, but also really desensitizes them, their sensory system, right in that oral cavity, so that they're kind of getting ready. It's sort of a direct way to target what the teether is doing and you being in control of it. So you can set a baby in front of a mirror so they can see what you're doing. If you have a little baby toothbrush that you're using, you can put your hand on top of theirs and show them how to kind of use it and to brush the couple teeth that they have, and to brush their gums as well.
Yeah, actually all my dental colleagues would be, you know, clapping very loudly about that. But I think, because we often, you know, as a dentist in my former career, the amount of parents that would say toothbrushing is a battle. And as a dental professional, it was nothing really we would ever look at. But actually, from what you're saying, it's more to do with the sensory oral development rather than the physiology of teeth and wanting to be in control. So I think it's a really good message for even for the dental profession to, you know, take that on board and encourage that sort of oral sensory exploration, which I think is brilliant. Sorry, yeah. I interrupted you.
It's okay. Yeah, it's a win-win for both yes. reasons. And like, yeah, and it does help, because kids with sensory sensitivities do really struggle with toothbrushing. I think there's, you know, also toddlers don't want to be pinned down and take the minute to brush their teeth. So there's several layers to it. But yeah, there's a sensory component to that for sure. I would say the third sensory tip I would give is just overall sensory exploration, letting your kid go barefoot outside in the grass, getting them, you know, if you have a beach nearby, even if that's at a lake and the sand is gritty, taking them to places like that, letting them walk around barefoot, letting them touch and explore, all really helps set that foundation for their sensory development, for what they're going to be willing to eat.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting to think of it as not just eating food, but sensory development, because it's a lot bigger than putting food in your mouth. It's a lot. So I think it's a really nice way for parents to think about that. And I certainly didn't think about it like that. So I think it's amazing. Thank you so much. So our last question that we ask everybody, in fact, we've got two more questions for you, but the last sort of big question is, what is your top tip to make mealtime adventures more fun for both parents and babies? And it's something we ask everybody that comes on the show.
You know, I think it's eating with your baby. I think so many people don't, because the baby is on their own schedule and they're often eating different foods. Again, especially if you're using baby food, they're not eating what you're eating. Maybe unless you're, you know, making your own food, or you want to feed the baby so that then you can then eat your own meal. But it is a really social experience, and it's another way to really set a good foundation for mealtimes being enjoyable, and that that your child grows to have a positive association with it, that it's not just about eating, that it's a time to come together around a table, whatever table that is in your home. And it's a chance to just engage and connect with your child. And that is so very important for the years to come, all the way up through the teenage years. Research shows us how absolutely critical this is, and how eating with your child together at the table actually increases your child's IQ, their social skills. And so starting as a baby, get is just a wonderful and probably the easiest way to do it, because your child will know nothing else, and it will help your child just have this really positive association with meals.
Yeah, that's, and I know I mentioned this to you, but I think every guest that we've had has agreed with that sentiment. So it's a really nice message that, and it's quite, it doesn't seem that big a step for families to take. And we're not asking people to, you know, launch a rocket ship. It's just be sociable and enjoy. So it's, I feel like it's quite a manageable thing for parents to try and do at least a few times a week, which is amazing. Okay, right, last question. So we know that all parents, and you're a parent as well, rarely have time to sit down for a hot drink. But if you did, what would your choice be? And we're sending you, obviously, our Love Curiosity, Feeding Your Curiosity mug. So what would you put in this to fuel you on your day?
I love coffee and tea, but I drink a lot more tea. But it's all herbal tea. And I love making my own tea blend. So I have lots of loose leaf tea. And oh, wow. I put liquor. Yeah, I get licorice root, mint, Tulsi, I think is the blend I'm using right now all the time.
Wow.
So
I'm impressed. Yeah. I'm also a little bit jealous.
Oh, my husband would not agree. He is always commenting on my tea station and the like, the amount of time that I put into like mixing the tea.
Well, my husband's a coffee drinker, so he's permanently concocting blends of coffee. So I think I get it. Listen, thank you so much. You've been such a fantastic guest, and you've just taught us again so much. And it's been a really, really enjoyable half an hour. It's been wonderful. And as I said, we will be sending you out your very own Feeding Your Curiosity mug, which I hope you carry on feeding your curiosity and being curious on your journey, because we want everybody to follow that ethos. And to our audience listening, please check out and subscribe to our social media channels on Instagram and Facebook to keep up to date with our latest episodes. And if you'd like to watch the full video podcast on the website, log on to bibidoo.co.uk. And if you've only got time to listen to the audio recording, it will be on Spotify, Amazon and Apple as well. As always, please do let us know what you think, and we love to hear from you. And if there's any topics you'd like to hear from us in the future, please do get in touch. Thank you.
Thank you. It was great. Bibidoo, bibidoo.